am a deputy U.S. Marshal, Boyd.
Givens, Raylan.
The infamous Boyd Crowder.
Either you let me go, or I'm gonna have to give you the slip.
I love this shit. This shit makes me hard.
Just happened to be driving by, huh?
No, I put a motion detector in.
Last I checked, you were a marshal, too.
And as a lawman?
I'm suspended.
And then you go all railing on him and drag him out of some restaurant by his nutsack.
They underestimate me at their peril.
Him? People underestimate Bob at their peril.
I got mad ninja skills, buddy.
Yeah, you know karate?
And two other Japanese words.
There is one thing I wander back to. We dug coal together.
After further review, if this is your first time, welcome. If you're a returner, welcome back. Today we're going to talk about episode 3, The Backstabbers, from Justified City Primeval. And before we get too far ahead of ourselves, let me take a moment. Last week we were joined by Rick Morris, who is, for my money, the hardest working man in new media. And I say that going back 20 years. So, like, before new media was new media. Before we get into it, Rick, how you doing today?
I am doing fine, Jason. Thank you so much. And a pleasure to be here with you as we're doing this season jointly here with the AFR brand and the FDH Lounge coming together, a simulcast, if you will. And only fitting as well with you being the FDH senior editor in addition to your own fine channel here. So bringing it all together to talk about Justified City Primeval, who better than me and you, buddy? And that's not a rhetorical question.
Getting into today's episode, which was aptly named Backstabbers. And I love when they do this because you go into the episode like looking for the inspiration of the title.
Yep.
And it's fine if you can find one, but it's really a great reflection of solid writing when you realize that the theme of the episode is covering multiple characters in a similar light.
Yes.
The first thing I want to get off of from this episode in particular. Last week, we mentioned that there are differences and similarities to these franchises that we're going to call them.
Mm-hmm.
And our first sort of, the difference is kind of a little jarring, was language and sexual activity.
Yes.
Now, upon editing that video and before we put it out, I remember thinking, there's probably going to be some viewers that think we're being a little overdramatic about that because it is kind of rampant. Almost all the platforms are loosening their grip on that whole standards and practices situation.
Right.
But we cautioned everybody and said, like, listen, it is what it is. But if it becomes too much, it's going to become distracting. And you brought up the point. The concern is that it could alienate the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in the first 10 minutes of episode 3 tonight, I think our concerns were slightly confirmed.
Yeah.
There wasn't an explicit gratuitous sex scene, but there was, let's just call it generic profanity,
mm-hmm.
from detectives, from other people that are not the main characters necessarily, but that still kind of felt not necessary.
Right.
And then it even goes a little further when we start talking about Willa, Raylan's daughter. And granted, I get that she's in that awkward teenage, hormones are going crazy, and sometimes you got to let a kid just be that kid, and then we can address it later. But, man, she dropped like 3.
Yeah.
And they, again, not necessary. But almost in like a testing manner, like she's almost daring Raylan to have a problem with it. And maybe where this kind of comes full circle is that Raylan's not leading your typical always at home with the mother every day. They're not sitting at home cooking dinner at 5 o'clock every day. There's a different dynamic in how their family works, and then when you factor in Raylan's job demands, it's understandable, but at the same time, you kind of almost go, this is probably going to become an issue at some point.
Yeah.
Whether it be show running wise or character wise.
I like to check out other reviews, sometimes other podcasts. Sure. And as I was doing for Succession, and the excellent, excellent podcast that Ryan and Greenwald did at The Ringer for that. And they would make, this being The Ringer, they're going to make their tongue-in-cheek references to the concerned troll under the bridge. And that's where, like, I just wonder if maybe we might have been coming across last week like we were the concerned trolls under the bridge. But, I mean, it's a thing where, yes, I think we were kind of vindicated on that. Because I was getting a sense of, like, how different this is from regular Justified, if you want to call it that. Early on with Caroline the lawyer and just kind of getting a sense of her, like, with her character and her being a conflicted kind of a person. And it's a thing where I have to say, going back to, I referred last week to Alicia Witt's character, Wendy Crow, from season 5, which, again, we were covering season 5, and I think we sort of embody the consensus that it was, it's like bad pizza, right? There's no such thing as a bad season of Justified, but it's like that one, that's the one everybody's going to put in sixth place, so to speak. But it's like the way that Caroline is being handled here, I think is so much better than what they did with Wendy Crow. They're handling it so much better as far as how they're portraying her being conflicted. And it's in a much more sophisticated kind of a way. So there's things I like better about the original, the mothership, if you will. But as far as like how they're writing this character versus Wendy Crow, I feel like she's meant to be the equivalent of it in this season, right down to the fact that Wendy Crow was a paralegal and was also in the same line of work, so to speak. I think they're doing a much better job nailing it with this lawyer.
And one thing I really appreciate about what they're doing with Carolyn is after that conversation we had last week revolving around the comparison almost or the parallels between those two, between Carolyn and Wendy, is what essentially motivated me to say, I think that by the end of this episode today, but I said last week, I think we're going to find that she may not be on our side, but Carolyn is going to start becoming less of an obstacle.
Yeah.
And what I love about that is I can report today, episode 3 did not deliver that.
Right.
But I think it's actually better.
Right.
Because there's going to be this little slow build. Now, I still think ultimately whether she becomes a full-on ally or if she's just not the obstacle we thought she was, I still think we're going to see that. I appreciate that they are doing it a little bit better. Because that is evident in the fact that it didn't have such a fast turnaround, where it's like, oh, she's a good guy kind of now.
Right.
Well, no, not yet, but we did see in that scene where she's talking to Sweetie in her office, and Sweetie's talking about that there may or may not be a murder weapon that he may or may not have in his possession. That exchange did kind of at least open the door a little bit to the fact that Carolyn's not cold.
Right.
She's not just a lawyer that's, you know, out to do whatever she's trying to do.
Right.
There's a human nature behind that. We're starting to, I think, in general, we as an audience should be starting to warm to her a little bit. But I do absolutely agree that if the parallel is Carolyn to Wendy, from a show-running standpoint, Carolyn is being presented much better.
Yes. And in terms of how she's going to turn out on the canvas here, in the parlance of any other AEW fans like myself, it's sort of right now like, is MJF going to do the face turn in the end here? It's kind of the same thing a little bit. And how
she- and if we want to use wrestling vernacular, I actually love that.
There's never a bad time to do that.
Because at some point in the first few minutes of the first episode, if we're using that terminology, we get the sense that she's going to be the heel. That's just, she may not be the big bad,
right,
but she's a heel. And at some point, and it may not be dramatic, right? It may not be a full-on heel turn, but there should be a heel evolution, if you will.
Yep. Yeah. One of the things that you see play out over the course of time, and that's what's going to happen as we go through here. Now, at the 37.5% done part of the series. So as we get to that point, 3/8 of the way done. And one of the things that I wanted to mention here, and this was kind of sad for me and you at the end here, because we kept holding out hope that ultimately it wasn't going to be Willa getting on that plane.
Yeah.
And she did. But it's a thing where when you go back over a period of time, I mean, it's true to the writing of, like, again, if Raylan wasn't Raylan in every way, right down to his stubbornness and everything else like that, he would have been able to make it work with Winona in the first place. And I remember, I think when watching the series finale, it was a little bit of a gut punch, I think, to a couple of us that, you know, this Richard guy that they brought in, like, he seems kind of neutered. Like, he wasn't a criminal like Gary, but it's like, oh, she found another Gary. She found another beta male to, like, chase away the Raylan kind of stuff here while she's probably still picturing Raylan between the sheets, let's be honest. But really, I think the way it plays out in those dynamics. But it's one of those things where Raylan, again, just can't help himself over a period of time. And it's one of these things where, in terms of his daughter, by the way, it shows up. I regret to be the one to tell you this, but on Wikipedia, I just found this. It shows Vivian Oliphant as being part of the recurring cast. So we may see her again, but it ain't going to be the next episode. It's not going to be Winona puts her back on a plane. It's not going to be like that. I hope they give us closure. I want to get closure on that. And you want to think that he's going to progress. But the thing is like, he made it through Justified without really progressing a whole heck of a lot. He'd have been with Winona and had the family, if not, because it's one of those things where I think we all applied our own logic to it, right? Like, he could have had the family with her. It wouldn't have taken a whole heck of a lot. You just stop being Raylan, like, by 1/100th, and you probably could have made it happen. So this was sad, but this was true to the writing of the character. And I think we're hoping for 15 years down the road later in their, you know, universe, some form of progression here to where he can put it together with his teenage daughter in those years and repair that relationship a little more.
Pardon the reference that you may not be up to date on.
Okay.
But it feels like what you, me, a lot of traditionalist Justified fans might be holding out hope for, and I'm not suggesting that it's off the table, is a Dark Knight Returns ending.
Okay.
Now, all you need to know is that in the Dark Knight Returns, you have Batman, you have Alfred, you have Catwoman, you have Bane. Batwoman and Catwoman work together, and there's a moment where Alfred basically tells a story where every time Bruce Wayne disappears, he hopes it's for good. He hopes he can go live a normal life. And that movie ends, spoiler alert, the movie's been out long enough, that Alfred is sitting at this cafe in France that he likes to go to on his vacation time, and he looks across and sees Bruce Wayne sitting with Selina Kyle, who is Catwoman, and you get this reassurance or the sigh of relief that, okay, maybe Bruce can go and actually live the life he always wanted to have. And at the end of all of this, if we're lucky enough, maybe we get like a flash forward and we can see maybe like a 22-year-old Willa coming home for Thanksgiving dinner or something, right? Everybody's happy. Everybody, it is what it is. This brings me to a very important point that I wanted to find an opportunity to bring up.
Okay.
So thank you for that.
All right.
In the world of content creation and people talking about entertainment, we live in an internet era where anybody can educate themselves on the nuts and bolts of what makes a show or a movie go. And a lot of times people focus on these terms and go a little crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And someone will say, this character wasn't great because they didn't have character development, a TV movie concept that people now are very familiar with.
Right.
My point with this show in particular is that lack of character development is not necessarily a bad thing. It doesn't make the character lesser.
Right.
And to your point, I think that as we watched through the original Justified, there were areas of character development that Raylan didn't have.
Right.
But here's the kicker. It fits so beautifully well into his character that if he had that character development, we might go, wait a minute, this doesn't feel right. So, we didn't get that development in his character in Justified, but I think that's intentional.
Yeah, I think so, and I think you really nailed it there, because one of the hallmarks of this golden age of TV in the 21st century that TV critic Alan Sepinwald first kind of, you know, dubbed it that. And I have the book that he wrote on that, where he wrote about several of the series. And it's a great book, start to finish, if anybody wants to go check that out. But in talking about this, one of the things that distinguishes it in these shows is that they don't pander, and that we don't get fan service. So as far as, like, I mean, not to say you never do, but it's got to fit the story. That's what differentiates this from some of the schlock that's on network TV. Let's be perfectly honest. Network TV, they are going to a lot of times kind of like make it kind of fit in there, and happy ending, and oh, hey, can we get a Sam and Diane dynamic here? Can we sprinkle that on top? And it's a thing where in these shows, they're uncompromising. It's art. They're at the risk of oversimplifying. That's what it is. And so, like, we root for Raylan because we're supposed to, because it's a well-written story that gets us to sympathize with him. But it's not necessarily their job to give us the happy ending in this. It's their job to give us the ending that they feel fits. Now, I felt like in watching Raylan through the course of it, maybe he had progressed enough to where he could have ended up with Winona and had a family and everything like that. And you just hate to see any time like that, that, you know, it's going to be a broken home with the daughter and everything like that. So it's sad on a human level regardless. But it's like, it's their job to make us root for him, but it's their job also to tell the story and give the ending they feel is true to the character. And that's what they did. It doesn't mean they did it wrong if we don't get the fan service, Jason. It's our job to ask for it, but it's not necessarily their job to give it to us.
As the MCU was developing, they started sprinkling in fan service and found that that particular fan base went crazy in a good way.
Okay.
To the point that they know that if they flood a movie with tons of fan service, there'll be people who criticize it. But they're still going to make hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. And the best example of this is Spider-Man No Way Home, which was the third of a series, where you get to see, spoiler alert, look away if you haven't seen it yet, you get to see all three of the modern Spider-Men on the same screen at the same time. And I was in the theater, and I'm telling you, people lost their minds. It was euphoria to do that. And Disney is making quite a living doing this. And Star Wars is actually the reference I want to make here, because there's going to be an upcoming video on my channel probably within the next, call it 2 weeks, because we want to get this out before the Ahsoka series drops, where one of the big talking points is going to be that this blank, this concept that we're going to talk about within the Star Wars world, was the one time that I, as a critical but honest fan, looked at it and said, you know what, Jon Favreau and the guys over there at Disney, how am I forgetting that guy's name? That this concept is the one time I wish that they did not go the route of fan service. And maybe it's me being too critical. But there is a point at which, even in a fictional fantasy realm, where there is such a thing as too much fan service.
There can be.
And that's why I love this show and lots of other shows that are critically acclaimed. They are not beholden to fan service.
Right.
They are beholden to telling a story.
Yep.
And what I do love about this is there's a parallel. What the reason why Star Wars and the MCU get such big numbers right now, in my humble opinion, is because the story comes from source material. And when the story comes from source material, there are things you can do and there are things you can't do. And while Justified does not even flirt with entering any sort of superhero or fantasy realm, what it does is say there's fan service or there's telling the story. And since Leonard Elmore basically is the godfather of all these stories, there's only so far we can deviate. Last week, you were telling me about how the City Primeval novel is still Leonard Elmore, but isn't Raylan.
Right.
But they can adapt Raylan to it because it fits. But a show like Justified City, City Primeval, The Bear, Breaking Bad, these are not productions where they are trying to get you to go, oh, I'm so glad they did that thing. No. they're telling you a story. You don't have to, you know, you don't have input on the story. You don't have to love the story. The story is what the story is.
Right.
And if they were to deviate from that and just start making all kinds of justified references,
right,
just to pay off fan service, I don't know that we would love it. As you were talking about the Willa angle and what we're not going to see, there was a point while we were watching where my gears started turning, go, okay, if he puts Willa on the plane, is there a possibility we're going to see Wynonna in a couple episodes? And I think the short answer is no.
I think we might.
I'll bring it on. I'll invite it with no question.
Because some shows will sometimes do like this unannounced kind of a thing here or whatever. I mean, it's fine. Just because we don't know that she participated in this, I'm not ruling it out.
It's an interesting dynamic. Yeah. I personally would just, to use your terminology, would mark out so hard if we saw Wynonna.
Yeah.
Knowing what we're watching, I'm not looking for it. I'm not expecting Wynonna or Boyd or anybody else. But in the event that we see Wynonna, yeah, you're going to see me physically like react to that.
You talk about what would be the mother of all fan service. What about Boyd in a cameo when they do like a Silence of the Lambs kind of thing? And like Raylan's trying to learn from Boyd about what this guy Clement might be up to. How awesome would that be?
You know, it's really funny that you mentioned that, because in the last video we put out, I did add something where there's a scene, and I remember, I want to say it's like three or four, season three or four, when Boyd ends up working for Black Pike or whatever it's called, and he's in the courtroom as the security for the lawyer.
Yeah.
So, again, Boyd, what are you doing here?
Boyd is part of my security team.
Security?
I would never presume to tell you how to do your job, and I understand that I'm very new to the security game. However, I have spent a considerable amount of time hiding explosives. Now, if you would like, I'd be more than happy to walk around here with you, show you where I would hide mine in case there might be a place that you might miss.
You have any explosives on you now?
Do you want to pat me down?
That, although is not fan service, would be a nice little just suggestive, like, oh, they planted a seed, and now we are harvesting said seed.
That would be incredible. By the way, season two, that was the season of Mags Bennett and the coal company and all that kind of stuff in there. But,
hey, real quick, you had mentioned Deadwood.
Yeah.
And while I'm not quite sure yet if there's an audience for a video like this.
Okay.
The crossover potential of just characters.
Yeah.
Between Justified and Deadwood is remarkable, because if I'm not mistaken, the guy that played Markham in Justified is a main character, is kind of a main character in Deadwood.
Yeah.
Beaver is in Deadwood, is he not?
Yeah. Like Dan, the guy that was Swearinger's sidekick, he was one of the Peckerwood criminals, and I think he was the guy holding somebody hostage in the marshal's office in the one episode.
I suppose I can get a shot of that bourbon.
No, two cups aren't just for me.
So.
Oh, yeah. I watched that recently.
Yeah. So, like, there's a bunch of little things like that in there. And, yeah, it is a thing. But there, the reference I was going to make from Deadwood, it's a thing where I have a kind of humorous point to make about Willa. And I have a more serious one about, we talked about last week, the acting job of Vivian Oliphant. I'm going to make a more humorous point first on this. And this is a thing of, like, that Hollywood likes to gaslight its male viewers a lot of times on things here, as they did in Emma. I'm going to give you an example from Deadwood, and you see if you can see where I'm heading with this. So as I was watching it, and Kristen Bell, I don't know if you got to the part in there where she played a teenage prostitute. And
I know.
And you're like, you're looking at it, she's playing like a 15-year-old. Dude, she was 24. She's a 20-year-old playing a 15-year-old. I saw that subsequently. She's 20.
Oh, really?
Hence the.
That's not at all where I thought that was. I thought you were going to tell me she is legit 15 years old.
No. She just the opposite. That's why she got the cap. I'm watching it tonight through that lens. That's why the cap's on. That's why the clothing is. And by the way, and for I think it was somebody from IGN last week and I, my bad if it wasn't IGN because I'm bagging on them, but who ripped her for the acting job on this. Where I said last week,
whoa,
I think she's at least passable as playing an awkward teen. In retrospect, she's better than that. That squeaky, what? That squeaky voice of hers is probably not her real voice, Jason Jones, if she's 20 years old. So it's
hold the damn phone.
Yeah. And the reviewer probably knew she was 20 when he buried her. So it's like, how do you know she's 20 and bag on the way she's playing a teenager? I don't get it.
Last week.
Yeah.
We discussed that review.
Yeah.
And basically suggested mm-hmm. that she is doing a very admirable job.
Yeah.
Playing a teenager. Now.
It's even now that we know this, isn't it?
I was under the impression that she was like a 17-year-old playing a 15-year-old.
Some age.
And I don't want to sound negative. But, and I have never watched Glee, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there is a kid that was on the show Glee that won an Emmy for their portrayal. And then I saw him in an interview. And I remember thinking, the guy on the show and the guy in the interview are exactly the same,
mm-hmm.
which makes me feel like the acting portrayal is diminished.
Yeah.
Now, we flip that over to back to this show. If she's 17 playing a 15-year-old,
yep.
that's not terribly difficult to do, even for yeah. a new actor.
Yeah.
If she's 20-something...
20 playing 15.
Playing a 15-year-old, and you're right, there's no way that voice is naturally her normal right. speaking voice. And her mannerisms that I mentioned last week,
yep.
the hat thing, the baggy coat, the
yep.
the kind of... I'm sure there's a name for it, but this thing that teenagers do when their voice moves in a pattern
mm-hmm.
that basically says, I'm saying something, but I'm asking in the hopes that you don't say what I don't want you to. That's not a thing 20-year-olds do.
Right.
So, to your point, now that I know that she's 20 playing a 15-year-old, her acting performance just went up a notch or two.
Exactly. Exactly.
Not the other way around.
Her acting job is even better than we thought last week because of this stuff. To the point about her voice, it would be hilarious. Like if she gave like, you know, if we saw her like giving an interview to a place promoting the show or whatever, and her voice was like Kathleen Turner or something, man, would I laugh my ass off.
So Rick, there was another thing that came up, and I'm sure most people didn't pick up on this, and I'm sure the only reason I picked up on it was going through Justified scenes in order to set up the last video. The montage, if you will, and montage may be a loose term here, but there was a series of scenes
mm-hmm.
where we see these detectives that we know entering in and arresting basically everyone associated with what we know right now. Mm-hmm. So we see, I forget her name off the top of my head right now, but the girlfriend in question of Clement gets arrested at work. Clement gets arrested. That whole exchange is...
Sandy.
In those scenes, which are just very self-serving, no big deal. They're just there to show you these people are getting arrested. But the manner in which it's done and some of the dialogue that the Detroit detectives are giving gave real hard deja vu to Vasquez in the original series... when Ava is basically trying to save her own skin as being a CI for Raylan, and Vasquez is very unimpressed with her results and basically says, if she doesn't give us something, we're going to come down on her and it's going to be RICO across the board, meaning that they need to get Ava, Boyd, everybody so that they can mount a case and take everybody down at once. And that's, again, with what this felt like tonight, was that they were trying to run this like it's a RICO case. I love when we see something and go, okay, this feels reminiscent loosely of this other thing that happened in the original Justified.
That is an incredible callback on your part. I got to say, I never would have thought of that in a million years. AUSA Vasquez with the host whole thing of how he went about stuff. And then if you remember, it part of that was because I think Rachel was still running the office before Art came back at the end, recuperated from his surgery or whatever after he got shot. But like Rachel was putting the squeeze on Ava too there for a while for her job. So that was, you know, that's an incredible callback. Yeah, I think it's very, very, very similar. And then, you know, there's some other things, some of these other law enforcement figures also too. I know there was something you picked up on. We talked about this off air and it led to a point that I had about that.
Yeah. And real quick, before we get to that, I just want to say, going back to the fan service part, I'm not asking for fan service, but just in the vein of if they were to give it to us, and I'm sure you're going to understand where I'm coming from here. Yours may not be the same.
Okay.
The biggest pop they would get from me for fan service would be if this starts to get out of hand.
Okay.
And Raylan seeks out the assistance of people. Because I really did love that storyline where Rachel, like we always thought it was going to be Tim or somebody else, and they gave it to Rachel, and she kind of hit the ground running, and I was loving that storyline of her just taking charge. Yeah. It's not her, though, although I would pop a little bit for her. If they could find a reason to recruit, even temporarily, Tim Gutterson, over the moon. I'd be over the moon.
That would be incredible.
You want me to kill him or wing him?
Let's start winging.
I don't know if there's a need for a sniper anytime soon, but just to see Gutterson on set, even if it was only for a minute, I would be over the moon.
We talked about this last week, and the roots of how you got to watch Justified, it was a prompt from me. And that was something that basically, you know, made you like the biggest Tim Gutterson mark out there on Justified. I'm a pretty big one myself. And it's a thing where I'll tell you this, in service of what you're saying there. One of the criticisms people had about Justified, and it was hard to find any. I mean, anything is a nitpick, basically, because like sure. I said, it's a bad episode, a bad season is like bad pizza. How bad could it really be? But people always said, we need more Tim Gutterson in this thing. Like, it definitely, it would have benefited from it. As epic as the show is, a little more Gutterson probably would have raised it a little bit more.
Now, to be fair to ourselves, before I say this, I think it's safe to assume, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, that if a story is based on Leonard Elmore's work and has Graham Yost or any elements from the original Justified, that you and I would both be very eager to digest that.
Yes.
And I don't think this is a huge one-off. I don't think we're going too far down a rabbit hole. But I think that if they thought they could make money off of it and created a show where Tim Gutterson takes over the Lexington office, Rachel's moved on, Art Mullins is out of the picture, Raylan is not in the... I would watch that. Now, I don't know that it has the staying power of something led off by Timothy Oliphant, but I think there are enough Justified fans that really love Gutterson and would love to see more of them.
Yes. I think we're not alone in this.
So, circling back again, to your point of the other law enforcement individual that you set up so nicely, I've had this feeling ever since... Detective Norbert asks Raylan if he has any kids, and when he says yes, he says, pull out a phone, you're going to want to record this. From that moment through all of what we watched tonight, I've just got this sinking suspicion that Detective Norbert's not going to make it through this season. He's playing way too fast and loose, and he thinks he's in control in situations where no one's in control. And it may not be death, but like, he's going to get his at some point.
Well, you're right. He's way too cocky. This is how we do things in Detroit.
It's that whole Detroit mentality thing that I think is setting him up.
When in fact, he hasn't dealt with a criminal like this before. And he's against somebody who's bigger than he's ever dealt with. Now, I will say, and again, Wikipedia is your friend, especially when you're recording later at night after one of these things here on Remembering Names. I want... When you made that point to me off air, I knew there was a point that I wanted to make to build on that. And that is, this is a character that is different than we're used to seeing, because I'm going to mention a couple of names here from the original series. There's Trooper Tom Bergen, who meets with the, spoiler alert, meets with the sad end toward the end of season three here. Very straight arrow, state trooper, family man, good counterpart for Raylan. They worked cooperatively a lot.
Okay.
A couple other figures to bring up here. Doyle Bennett, the crooked police.
Okay.
There. You have Sheriff Nick Mooney, the crooked sheriff down there in Harlan. So you have down there, it was a thing where it wasn't a matter of having, because like the gentleman that you're talking about here, this Norbert, he's not a dirty cop. I mean, he's a little bit of a renegade as far as how he goes about stuff. He's not a dirty cop. But like the archetype of Justified is you're either Doyle Bennett or Nick Mooney or whatever. You're either that type of cop or you're Trooper Tom Bergen and you're the straight arrow guy. So seeing a shades of gray character here, the likes of which you didn't often see. Ironically, that's the lane that Raylan played in some of the time here as well, when he would play fast and loose on getting things done. So you're seeing a guy who, and I always used to refer to him as U.S. Marshal Eric Roberts,
remember that?
But like he was kind of like Raylan too. A couple times they were together, people were joking about that. That would make a good buddy cop spinoff, and I would love that. That would be like one of the greatest things on TV if that was a buddy spinoff.
Now, I got to share something with you real quick. What? Again, because of the digging I've been doing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's the best exchange that buddy cop duo had in Justified.
Miller, would you call this a herd, a gaggle, or a flock of asshole?
I would call this the United Nations of assholes.
But yeah, I think we all saw that when I want to finish this series.
Yeah.
But if down the road we had an Eric Roberts and Timothy Oliphant buddy cop show,
right?
I think a lot of people would watch that.
Well, like, here's the thing, though. Even U.S. Marshal Eric Roberts, like him and Raylan, like, they're not in the same classification as this gentleman here, because
he's
the guy where it's like, you get the sense that, I mean, he's gotten away with it so far in his career, but his mouth's writing checks that his ass can't cash, so to speak. And that's the thing, like, Marshal Eric Roberts, Marshal Raylan Givens, not the case. Like, these guys can be a little renegade-ish from time to time, but neither one of them is, like, so much of a self-impressed smartass that they risk getting in over their head. This is a guy who just basically doesn't realize what he's up against. And I agree with you, may come to learn that the hard way. He may be a sacrificial lamb along the way because, again, it's never a spoiler with anything in the Justified universe to say there will be more bloodshed. And if you put him as one of the morning line favorites in that regard, I think you'd be right.
But where does Shelby fit into your this or that?
It's interesting because as a lawman, he played it straight. He was an honest cop up until the time at which, of course, once he realized he was going to be made as Drew Thompson, obviously then he's trying to cover it, whatever. Having said that, even in that moment, he's still trying to spirit Ellen May out of town and everything like that. He's trying to save her as he's doing this. So it's one of those things where, and this is one of the fascinating things about an episode that you and I had talked about off air very recently here, Decoy, from, I think it's episode 4.10. It's one of the three or four greatest shows. It has to be on the Mount Rushmore of Justified shows. And there are so many great action parts to it and the sequences and whatever. But the character work in that episode is amazing because Raylan is just, you know, he's just refusing to give him any kind of a break. And he's just seeing him the way that he sees Arlo. And like to him, any criminal, he's going to see Arlo to whatever degree. And Shelby slash Drew is, I think subtly, I mean, he's not wasting too much energy on it, but I think he's trying to convey to Raylan that the years had made him a changed man somewhat. I mean, let's not get carried away. He didn't go become a missionary in Africa or anything like this. But as far as trying to be a good man and everything like that, I mean, some of that was keeping his cover, obviously, a respectable member of the community. But that's a guy that was a good lawman for as long as he could be. And then in the end, when he was going to get smoked out, he had to do what he had to do to survive. So it's I put him more toward the trooper Tom Bergen side of things, even though Raylan would probably want to put a loaded gun to my head for comparing the two guys. I don't think they're as dissimilar as Raylan would think.
Well, no, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there in that there is Drew Thompson.
Mm-hmm.
An event happens. He has to make a radical change.
Yes.
But in order to sell the change,
yeah,
he's got to actually be that guy.
Yes.
Now, this is so unrelated, but I love the quote from the movie Air, which is actually about how Nike acquired Michael Jordan as a sponsor, which has absolutely nothing to do with what we're talking about here. There's a speech in Air where Matt Damon's character, Sonny Vaccaro, is trying in the moment. He knows he's got to sort of implore the other side of the table to see what he sees.
It's the most predictable pattern. We build you into something that doesn't exist, and that means you have to try to be that thing all day, every day. That's how it works.
The notion that, like, in Drew Thompson's case, he couldn't be Shelby part-time. Right. Otherwise, the veil comes off and everyone realizes that Shelby is actually Drew.
Right.
So, to your point, I love that the character knew that he had to sell it.
Right.
So he actually had to be Shelby, a good cop, a good sheriff, all that stuff. He had to be that. And then, like you said, to the point where the jig is up.
Right.
And then you know, he's got to revert a little bit back to being Drew Thompson. But again, another point you made, the whole Ellen May thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a lot of people in that situation, once the Drew Thompson veil comes up, they normally would just say F it all. Like, everything can burn.
Right.
But there was still some goodness of him trying to get to do that one last thing for the good side of things before everything goes belly up.
Right.